You're on.
All right.
I had mentioned Mr. Schatz, who I think at that time was either the provost or the associate provost at Carnegie Mellon University. Mr. Mendelson, his name slips me, who's an attorney. Dr. Abrams.
Solomon
Abrams was on that, was on the board. Trying to think of other names. Those are
How about Mrs. Reisenstein?
Reisenstein on the board?
Mrs. Reisenstein was on the board when I first came on it, and then I think a term expired, and I doubt whether she wanted to continue any further. But she was on the board, if I recall, when I initially joined it.
What about Mrs. Marcus Aaron?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mrs. Reisenstein, I confused the names there. I'm sorry, that should be deleted. Mrs. Reisenstein was not on the board. I'm sorry. I confused her with Mrs. Aaron. Mrs. Aaron was on the board. I'm sorry. I confused the two. Mrs. Aaron, I think, was on the board, but for a short time.
She had been on for a long time.
She had been president of the of the board at one.
Who was the president when you were a member?
Oh, let's see. Miss Camara was the president. Then, if I recall, Mr. Brownlee served as president. And then, what was his name? Dr. Patrick was the president in the final year of the board.
Do you remember his first name?
I can't recall.
What do you think is the public's perception of the public school system now versus then, or then versus now, or whichever?
Well, of course, my impression necessarily has to be a very superficial one. I do have a feeling, but my feeling is that the school system has evoked greater confidence now on the part of the public, and it seems to be on a more solid basis than when I was on the board. Now, that is purely a superficial reaction, which I just get by a sense reading the newspapers and talking to people. But I really have no firsthand insight into the actual functioning of the
board. Do you
think
that switching to an elected school board made a difference?
Perhaps. I think that, to me, the more fundamental change was reducing the size of the school board. I thought the shift from 15 members to, I guess, the present 9 members was very good, because to me the board was a very unwieldy body, and although I was not enthusiastic about the elected basis, and still have some question about it, I think that a smaller board can function more effectively.
You mentioned that you were involved with the financial concerns of the school system. Where were you finding money, and was the United States contributing then?
Well, of course,
the government.
Yes, of course. We've had the pattern now for some years that the way local schools are financed is that the local property tax pays for a portion, and so does the so-called earnings tax. A significant portion comes from the state in the form of a a subsidy from the state government, and some funds come from the federal government. I might explain that one reason that was used to place the board on an elective basis was to give the board an authority to, in a sense, determine what the tax rate should be. As an appointed board, and this follows the edict of the courts, we would have to depend upon the state legislature whenever we wanted to have an increase in the tax rate, because the state legislature had that authority, and was felt that an appointed board could not be vested with that authority, namely the authority to determine the extent of its taxing power. And so the present board now, you see, can determine whether or not they'll go ahead and increase the tax rate.
Did you always have enough money to do whatever you wanted, or was there a problem?
Well, there was always a problem of convincing the state legislature, and we were also having difficulty on the internal financial management of the school system because of changes in personnel. As I might say, I found myself embarrassed by the fact that some of the financial data given my finance committee proved to be in error, and this did sort of frustrate us, when I say us, the finance committee, in formulating recommendations as to the financial operations of the board. But this was because of the fact that our, I forget what his term was, our director of finance resigned, and the school superintendent was trying to as a temporary expedient work out an arrangement to furnish us with the financial data, but we were in a very difficult position with respect to understanding the exact facts.
Did you ever have problems with the teachers and their salaries, like going on now? There are some school districts where the teachers have resorted to actually striking in order to get what they feel is they deserve.
Yes. Well, in fact, I was during my term on the school board, I think it was the longest strike that we had in Pittsburgh did take place. It was a very, very difficult situation, and if I recall correctly, it was only the intervention of one of the judges of the Court of Common Pleas that finally forced the board, in a sense, to settle the matter. It was a very, very bitter confrontation.
What were the issues?
Basically, the question of compensation.
And how did the board feel about it? Was the money available? Usually they say there's money there, we're not getting it.
Well,
if I
recall, I think we did have to, within the limits set by the legislature, and now I'm not too certain of the exact facts, but if I recall, we did say, well, we'd have to go ahead on this basis, and if necessary, go to the state legislature for additional authority. But certainly the board itself was not convinced that the demands as presented by the teachers union were fully justified. I should at this point interject and say that one of the basic problems, as I see it in a school system, whether it be Pittsburgh or another school system, is that of the management of the personnel, and what your position is with respect to the recruitment of teachers, the advancement of teachers, and the issue of the of pay, namely not only as to the general levels of pay, but it's the use of some sort of merit recognition.
Are you in favor of that?
Well, from my days on the Chicago School Board, I had always come out in favor of some way of recognizing the particularly outstanding teacher. I did feel that taking a good teacher out of the classroom and saying that the one reward was to give that teacher a position as an assistant principal or a principal, I didn't think that was an entirely sound practice, because some teachers, whether it be in a public school level or at the university level, some teachers who perform excellently in the classroom and who might not either be interested in or have great aptitude for administration, that we are not making the proper use of that talent or giving it the adequate recognition. Of course, at the university level, we can recognize on the basis of whatever standards we set as to merit. And I felt in any event that a school system should have some means of recognizing the teacher's outstanding, and whether you call that teacher a master teacher or give some other title, let that teacher be a force also for working with the other teachers and improving their capabilities.
How did you feel about letting go poor teachers and giving high school, grade school, public school teachers tenure, so to speak?
Well, tenure, of course, raises some very, very difficult problems. Your question, I think, is very well put. I did not think that we made as much use as, call it the so-called probationary period, or the period during which the teacher does not have tenure, to weed out the weak teacher. I did not feel that, at least when I was on the board, that we were making enough use of that so-called probationary period to, first of all, if the teacher showed, say, the entry teacher showed some weaknesses, to first attempt to correct them, but then if we saw that might be a difficult or insurmountable problem, to let that teacher go, because the procedure, and I haven't kept up with the present legal provisions, which might be the same, the procedure for letting the tenured teacher go, it's like letting the tenured professor go, proves to be a very difficult one, and one to which you do not resort too readily, so that once the teacher is demonstrated consistent in competence, the task of getting that teacher out of the system can prove to be very formidable. And let's also remember that a teacher may start out initially to be a good teacher, but because, whether it be age, because of
that was primarily what I had in mind.
Psychological factors, that we may say, well, we should initiate steps to remove that teacher. And the question I always have in mind is how readily do we do it? Now, bear in mind, a very practical consideration comes up there, that an individual who's been trained as a teacher, and if that's the only skill they have, except in certain fields now, like a teacher in mathematics, a teacher in the sciences, may be able to get a job someplace else. But if basically their occupational skill is that of teaching, and we release them, and we dismiss them from the school system, you're faced with a tough problem. That would be very difficult for them to get other employment. But on the other hand, you have to weigh that against the interest of the youngsters to keep an unsatisfactory teacher in the system, keep them on indefinitely, and just wait until their retirement comes up, or to try some process of, call it attrition, to get them out. That I think is most unfortunate. I might say there's also always raised a problem in my mind as to the training of teachers. I happen to be a person, and I must say this very candidly, that who does not believe in schools of education. At a point, obviously, I could make too much on the school board, but I happen to believe that teachers people who want to go into education basically should come into colleges of arts and science, get a very good education, and if they're interested in becoming teachers, that we offer certain special courses for them in teaching techniques, but that they should come in with a good grounding in education per se, and not run them...
Well-rounded.
Not run them through schools of education, and I'm not just thinking Pitt here, but generally schools of education have not impressed me as vehicles for, one, attracting the brightest individuals and preparing them for teaching.
When you were talking about the school strike, you said it was one of the longest in the history.
How long was it?
Approximately.
I think it went on for 2 months, 10 weeks or something. It was a very long period. And I might say it was not only the pressure of the judge, but the pressure of the parents, which perhaps you people realize, trying to get the youngsters back in the school, that the youngsters were driving them crazy, so that you're a board of education is in an awkward situation, because the parents say, get them out of our hair, do anything to solve the problem, because we're going nuts, so to speak, trying to deal with the situation. So you're in an atmosphere where this so-called collective bargaining is poor. And I might say, and this indicates the generation gap that I reflect, that seeing teachers on strike, seeing teachers picket the school board, I found very difficult to reconcile with my concept of a teacher and the dignity of a profession. Now, I know that's old-fashioned, but I have to express my viewpoint, and particularly when the court had issued an order, if I recall in our case, ordering some of the teachers back, and when teachers defy a court order, and then to have those same teachers get up in the classroom and try to teach students how to respect the law, again, I never could reconcile. But I realize I'm old-fashioned on that.
You made some notes there. Have we covered
I put redistricting, disciplinary problems. The budget process is very, very basic to...
Talk a little bit about that.
After all, it's like any sort of budget, and I just raised a few days ago in connection with the federal budget at some meeting of the World Federalists. The budget is really a very basic means for dealing with your programs in the school, your priorities, your allocation of resources, and is a very good vehicle for public intervention in the school process.
How?
Well, first of all, we have to... A budget is proposed. You get the proposed budget. The people who are interested in the school system, or whether I'm interested in state government, well, particularly let's combine the school system, you're required to have public hearings about it. Whether it be parents or others who are vitally concerned with the school system, then can speak up and indicate what they think about the allocation of resources. What do you think about the programs? I felt that the budget itself was not prepared very well. In fact, I raised the same issue on the Chicago Board of Education, because I feel I have some expertise in that subject. I don't say that with just smugness, but I, for example, the university I've taught a course in budgeting for quite a few years, both as a director of finance of the state in Illinois and financial vice president of the corporation. The area of finance is somewhat familiar to me. And when I was on the Pittsburgh board, I tried my best to improve the budgeting setup. And I understand the League of Women Voters and others are very sympathetic to that. Now, I haven't followed through recently, but certainly I accomplished little in terms of getting a better budget prepared. When I say a better budget, a budget which the public can understand. After all, the average budget document frightens people away. To try to understand it, they take one look at it and say, well, what is this all about? And I have contended that that we should rethink the budget process and have a budget so that when it comes up as a proposal, that's what it is basically, you have a budget proposal, you hold public hearings, so that the reasonably intelligent citizen can pick up that budget and say, well, at least I understand what they plan to do. I got no place fast. If I may be anecdotal on that point, let me put it this way. I have two anecdotes to tell. One about the Pittsburgh Board of Education. I once made the point during one of the hearings that I didn't think that the members of the board understood what the budget was all about. And I will not say which president then said, I'd like to talk to you privately. Called me and spoke to me privately and said, you know, you're embarrassing members of the board. Because I guess he felt maybe what I said was true. and he said, well, look, if you were just, if I may use the vernacular, lay off, I'll make you chairman of the finance committee. I didn't go on that basis. Well, the same way in Chicago, when I was arguing that their budget, which was just a huge document, that really it meant nothing. The public couldn't get anything out of it. One of the board members finally spoke up and said, well, Joe, please, don't change the budget. I think I understand a little of this now. I wouldn't understand anything if you change the budget. So the budget, let me put it this way, can be a very important means for public participation. Now, whether they've changed it much now, I don't know. I haven't followed it. I know they brought in some, I think, one of the public accounting firms to help them out on revising it. And it was just as I was leaving the board, but I'm in no position to say so. But if the community is going to participate in the decision-making process, so far as the schools are concerned, the budget is a very important means for doing so. And that applies, by the way, whether you're dealing with state budgets or even the federal budget, of course, which is highly intricate, but even in trying to understand what is happening, that it does offer a means. But I realize once you get up to the state level, federal level, the budget becomes a very formidable document. But a school board, which is really dealing with one basic function, unlike a state budget or a federal budget, a school budget offers an invaluable means for the public doing something about it, intervening. I'm not saying they can't intervene at other stages, but you see, the budget, you're dealing with numbers of personnel, you're dealing with programs of the school, and if those are set forth in an intelligent way, a readily understandable way, that will give parents and other members of the public a chance to at least look at it and say, gee, well, I understand that the board is going to emphasize this versus something else. I understand what the board wants to do about personnel, what they have in mind about construction and things like that.
Any further now?
Let's say discipline personnel management or budget process discipline. No, that's internal problems. A view which I have had about school systems, and I had it both with the public, with Pittsburgh and Chicago, and I think maybe Pittsburgh is doing something on that score. As I know a little of the art program from my work with the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts. I've always been a proponent that school systems should make maximum use of community resources, that we should permit. I remember once trying to get this adopted in Chicago. I understand some school systems are doing are doing something along the lines, which I predicted, which I advocated, not necessarily just because I advocated, but of course, particularly in a city like Chicago, and certainly to an extent in Pittsburgh, you have people who are conversing with languages, you have men and women in the sciences, many men and women in the arts, and my feeling is that we ought to bring those people into the school system as special lecturers, and I don't give a hang whether they have a teacher certificate or don't have a teacher certificate. I'm not too sure what a teacher certificate means anyhow, but I would like to say, well, look, if we have these rich intellectual and cultural resources in the community, are we making the fullest use of those resources? Because many people like to lecture. I know the Pittsburgh school system does bring in some lawyers to give lectures on the legal system, but I would say that there ought to be a very, very well thought out program and almost taking an inventory of what our resources are and saying, well, are we bringing in people, let's say, whether they're physicists, if I'm thinking of high school, if you're teaching physics, you're teaching chemistry, or bringing in people. We have a lot of foreign groups there, people conversing with foreign languages, and saying, well, why don't we use those people? For example, if you want to teach conversational French, wouldn't it be much better to bring in some native French people we have here than to bring in some person who finished 20 credits of French in high school and probably goes to France has quite a bit of difficulty making themselves understood. So.
When you finished with the school board, what was your next job or project?
That was 76. I know, I'm trying to think whether I had just finished with the school board. No, I was just finishing with the school board in 76, but I was writing my report then. I was, and of course, I should look that up, and that Lusu, I sometimes forget the year. Then I was a consultant to the Commission on Operation of the United States Senate. I think I went down there in 76, and it was, I knew the school board was coming down. I'm trying to recall when I submitted my report. It might have been just about the time I was going off the school board. This was a commission which was set up by the United States Senate.
You watchdog on the Potomac?
Well, no, I already, that came out in
79.
But this, I went down there to advise.